First of all, big news from Raleigh yesterday as Republicans in the State House and Senate announced they have finally reached an agreement on Medicaid expansion. Democrats, led by Governor Roy Cooper, have been pushing for this for a decade, ever since the Affordable Care Act made it possible. Republicans came out in support just last year, but then it took a year for them to work out the details among themselves. State Senate leaders had wanted Medicaid expansion tied to a reform of laws regulating new hospital and health care facilities. House leaders initially balked at that, but agreed to limited reforms to reach this week's deal. Democrats and healthcare advocacy groups issued statements praising the announcement, though there is one caveat: the bill expanding Medicaid, even when it passes, would not take effect until after the state approves a budget. Those talks are still yet to come. North Carolina is one of only 11 states that haven't already expanded Medicaid to cover more individuals, but when it does, Medicaid will cover about 600,000 more residents. While Medicaid expansion now has bipartisan support, numerous other bills are still more controversial, including two that have drawn heavy criticism for numerous anti-LGBTQ provisions, most notably SB 49, the so-called Parents' Bill of Rights that's already passed the state Senate. The Carrboro Town Council, the Durham City Council, Durham County Commissioners, and the Chapel Hill Carrboro City School Board have all passed resolutions denouncing those bills. No action yet from the Chapel Hill Town Council, but Mayor Pam Heminger told 97.9 The Hill there is a plan to address them.
SB 49 is very controversial to us. It doesn't reflect our values. We have kind of moved away from doing lots of different statements that weren't relevant or that we had control over, but this one we will be doing a statement. We will get that put out there as well. It doesn't reflect our values, and it's just been so disappointing to watch the state legislature try to weigh into things that we really don't think are very productive for our society as a whole. And hopefully the governor will veto these things. But we also know that they have a veto override probability. So it's really disheartening to watch all this happen.
That's Mayor Pam Heminger speaking there. The full conversation in the News on the Hill section of our website, chapelboro.com. Now we turn to the catastrophic train derailment last month in East Palestine, Ohio, which has caused massive impacts and left many unanswered questions, including why there hasn't been a federal disaster declaration to provide more immediate support. Duke climatologist Ashley Ward discussed that question with us recently. Here's 97.9 The Hill's Brighton McConnell with more on what she had to say.
Ward, who works on climate policy and resiliency, was quick to point out that she's been reading the same news reporting and government releases as everyone else when it comes to the Norfolk Southern crash and subsequent chemical fires. While the incident is different from her area of expertise, which focuses more on responding to or preparing for extreme weather as a result of climate change, she did say the initial days following the crash reminded her of a community's natural disaster response.
There's been quite a bit of debate about where is FEMA, where is EPA, who's doing what with respect to what's happening in Ohio. I think this is very common with respect to post-disaster, you know, anything, particularly with climate change.
The senior policy associate said she believes the role of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, means it can be ill-equipped to deal with climate disasters and potentially environmental or air quality threats like the train derailment. While the president can, quote, declare a major disaster for any natural event, according to FEMA, there's less immediate guidance for the agency when it comes to a machine failure or man-made issue. FEMA also makes recommendations to the president on whether to establish a public assistance program following emergencies, but Ward said some of the criteria it measures does not favor rural areas. She pointed to FEMA's use of per capita impact to create a threshold of necessary property damage to deem what is severe wreckage, which means more affluent communities could receive more attention.
That's another interesting factor here with respect to what's happening in Ohio. There wasn't actually a lot of property damage. And so when people say it doesn't qualify for a disaster declaration, that's a lot of times what they're talking about. Now, this is an important caveat, because if you have a tornado blow through Caswell County, it might actually cause a lot of damage to the people that live there. It's not going to hit $15 million. So this biases urban areas, particularly in the Southeast, but in a lot of areas in the country, if an urban area is not affected, it doesn't reach the threshold for disaster declaration.
Ward likened this to her work studying the effects of extreme heat. While heat waves or drought may not cause damage to infrastructure, it can still create untenable living environments or scenarios where federal assistance would help those affected. The Biden administration says FEMA is in, quote, constant contact with the response teams and officials in East Palestine. Additionally, the EPA has said it's committed to having the railway company pay for a variety of tests to ensure the Ohio community is safe. Ward said, however, that she and many others in the climate policy realm are interested in making changes to the Stafford Act, which led to the creation of FEMA in 1988.
I think, you know, understanding how our federal mechanism works for response and recovery is really an important part of the conversation for the train derailment, yes, but also when we think about climate change and climate extremes. And this is why I don't work in disaster management, but those who do have often advocated for an updating, you know, a redoing of the Stafford Act.
Meanwhile, there is already legislation working its way through the U.S. Congress. A bipartisan bill, co-sponsored by both of Ohio's senators, was introduced on Wednesday to levy larger fines on railway companies after a crash and to create more safety requirements when carrying hazardous materials. For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Brighton McConnell.
Your time is 6:13. Sports Now brought to you by Mac Orthodontics. Let's begin with Tar Heel women's basketball. They got off to a good start in the ACC tournament. 7-seeded Heels taking down 10-seed Clemson 68-58 last night. Alyssa Usby, Deja Kelly, Ava Hodgson, and Kennedy Todd Williams all scored in double figures as Carolina got their first ACC tournament win in 4 years. Their first, actually, in the Courtney Banghart era. Now it's on to the quarterfinals where Carolina will face the 2-seed. That would be Duke, a team the Tar Heels have already beaten twice this year, most recently less than a week ago. Here's head coach Banghart on the importance and the advantage of familiarity.
The benefit as a coach is my prep is going to be, they haven't played since the last time we played them. So tonight will be, I'll sleep a little bit longer than I typically do in these type of events. So I think we know them well. I do think there's a familiarity of opponent that's helpful. You know, we hadn't seen Clemson except for in January. Eve wasn't even playing. We hadn't seen them since then. So there's a little bit of like, wait, who are they? And you kind of got to feel them out. I think for both teams, you know, there's a heavy level of familiarity, I think, helps. I mean, you guys play the game, but it certainly helps me. I've got a better sense of the flow of the game for sure.
Courtney Banghart there. Tip-off time tonight is 6 p.m. We'll have it all for you right here on 97.9 The Hill, starting with pregame coverage at 5:30. We're also gearing up for Carolina Duke on the men's side. That'll be Saturday night in the Smith Center. Big game, of course, for UNC's NCAA tournament hopes, and it's also senior night for the Heels, so especially big for the seniors, particularly fifth-year senior Leaky Black, who's also going to break the all-time UNC record on Saturday for most games ever played in a Tar Heel uniform. Talking about Leaky Black this week, head coach Hubert Davis got emotional.
My hope is everybody wants to be around good people. People that encourage you, people that put a smile on your face. In the 5 years that I've been around Leaky, three as an assistant and two as a head coach, that's what he's done for me. That's the type of player that I want to be around and coach in person every day. And so to think that this is definitely going to be his last home game. Thank you for asking me that. Now I'm starting to think about it and get emotional because I don't want it to end. He is a special player, but he's even more of a special person. And what he's done for this team, what he's done for this program and this university and this community, he doesn't understand the impact that he has because he's really quiet and he doesn't like to be in front of the camera, but what he has done is set up, he's a cool dude. I'm going to miss him a lot.
That's head coach Hubert Davis speaking there. Tip-off time tomorrow is 6:30. We'll have the game for you right here on 97.9 The Hill. Our coverage starts at 5 with countdown to tip-off. Basketball's got the spotlight, but it is a busy weekend all around for Tar Heel sports. UNC baseball hosting Stony Brook for a 3-game series starting today. First pitch has now been set for 2:30. That's earlier than originally scheduled because we're expecting more rain this evening. UNC softball is hosting Purdue Purdue and James Madison in the Carolina Classic. That starts at 3 o'clock today against Purdue. Top-ranked UNC women's lacrosse has a big matchup today against 4th-ranked Boston College, 4 p.m. on Dorrance Field. That's a rematch of last year's national championship game, and Carolina head coach Jenny Levy needs just one more win to hit 400 in her career. The men's lacrosse team is also in action, hosting Denver at 11 tomorrow morning. UNC men's tennis is at Notre Dame today and Louisville on Sunday. Women's tennis hosts Louisville today and then Notre Dame on Sunday. And the Tar Heel gymnastics team hosts Air Force at 6 o'clock tonight in their final home meet of the season. And the Carolina Hurricanes also have two games this weekend. They're at Arizona tonight at 9:30, and then they're back home Sunday hosting Tampa Bay at 3. Finally, congrats to Tar Heel women's soccer stars Talia Della Peruta and Avery Patterson. They've just been named to the under-23 U.S. Women's National Team. They'll play 3 friendlies against National Women's Soccer League teams later this month.